Chairman.
Use that stick.
February 6th, time is 5:17. Present are Representative Coghill, Representative Lynn, co-chair Representative Jay Ramirez, and myself, co-chair Representative Newman. First bill up, we will be hearing House Bill 382 by Representative Ramirez. May the record show that we are joined also by Representative Crawford. House Bill 382, an act relating to corking, resealing, packaging of wine served with a meal and removal of cork, sealed, or packaged wine from licensed premises. Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jay Ramirez, District 10. Delighted to introduce.
Do you need the light off?
All right. No, I'm okay. I'm fine.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm delighted to introduce House Bill 382, which is a recorking bill that relates to the consumption of wine on premise. And like everybody else in this room, I'm concerned about consumption of alcohol and blood alcohol content and the safety of our roads. And I'm looking for practical ways to reduce that risk without generating a significant fiscal note in the process. And so what House Bill 382 attempts to do is from a very common sense point of view, Representative Crawford, if you and I went out for a steak dinner, we got $20 steaks, and we both ate half the steak and we were full, we would not hesitate to get a styrofoam container to put the other half of our steak in it to go, and to take it home or to give it to our dog to eat it for a meal tomorrow, or just to let it spoil in our refrigerator and throw it away 3 days later. But the fact of the matter is that human nature, what it is, if you and I go to dinner and we buy a $40 bottle of wine and we drink half of that bottle of wine and we're satiated, we're satisfied with our meal, there is an inclination not to surrender the value sitting on the table. And as such, we would not be gluttonous, and if we were full after we consumed half a steak, that we would continue to eat the steak because otherwise it was going to go to waste. We would either push away from it or, as I say, we would take it in a styro to go. And I want to try and introduce the same common sense into the consumption of table wine. I share your concerns about drinking and driving, but I'm aware of some resistance in this body to anything that creates a fiscal note. A wine recorking law, which has been adopted by 33 other states, generates no fiscal note. It would allow, as dictated by the Alcohol Beverage Board, for a restaurant to recork a bottle, maybe put tape over it, to put it into a retail sleeve, to staple it twice on top, whatever the alcohol board is comfortable with. You have in your packet a personal email from Doug Griffin, the director of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. And although it's not written on their letterhead, and he says, speaking only for myself and not on behalf of the ABC board, I support this legislation. And he goes on to say that this just removes one more excuse for a person to drink excessively and endanger the public by driving. This concern over moderate alcohol consumption leading to a potential DUI arrest has been heightened in the public's mind and for hospitality business owners by the adoption of the 0.08 BAC standard. So I come from a school that says that although 0.08 may be the criminal standard for drunk driving, but we're all better off if people leave a restaurant at 0.06. And the only way that we're better off than that is if they leave a restaurant at 0.04, because we all know that drivers become impaired with the consumption of any alcohol. And although it's legal up to 0.08, and I defend the law of the land, I think that if you're satiated after half a bottle of wine, a consumer should not be faced with having to surrender the value, because I think in most cases the consumer defaults to wanting to somehow enjoy the value that's in front of them, and if they can't take the bottle with them, then they consume it. And this bill, without suggesting any degree of prohibitionism, is good for the restaurants because they continue to sell wine. It's good for the consumers because they can drink only until they've had enough. And it's good for public safety because some people will choose to enjoy the remainder of the bottle in the safety of their home. And because this bill falls under the provision of the ABC board, I'm very confident that they will come up with a measure that will allow for it to be safely recorked. And in the back of your packet, you'll see some items that were downloaded off the internet that include new corks and corking machines that only cost from $13.95 to $93 in order for a restaurant to properly recork a bottle so that we don't jeopardize any open container laws. So with that, I'd like to conclude my testimony, Mr. Chairman, and I'm available to answer any questions for the committee.
Representative Coghill.
So on the recorking, the language says that the open container, it's not an open container if the cork is reinserted by a licensee or the seal made. Is there any way around having a cork inserted in a bottle that would allow it to still be open container? For example, having a pipe, you know, a straw through it, or I mean, do we get run into problem there, or do we need to have it sealed every time?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill. The risk that the public safety has any time somebody goes into a liquor store and gets a bottle of liquor or 12-pack of beer is that somebody's going to break into that pack and make an open container when they're in a vehicle. And so to some extent that risk it exists with this bill. But a bottle recorker would really bring the bottle back to its original form, and then with some tape and in a sealed sleeve or whatever the ABC board dictates, presumably would discourage somebody who bought a table wine from doing that on the road. And then beyond that, in that same letter that's in your packet from Doug Griffin at the ABC board, he talks about how there is a movement even with more expensive bottles of wine to actually begin to use a screw cap. And in this case, I think it would give the ability to the ABC board to regulate the manner in which a bottle of wine is recorked to their satisfaction. Were you to recork it, put a piece of black electrical tape over it, put it in a retail sleeve and staple it twice, you would certainly have made that package more secure than if you went and bought a six-pack of beer from a liquor store.
Mr. Chairman, so if we reinsert it so that it takes a corkscrew to take it out, I can appreciate that, and so I was looking for a way that we could get around that, because people being clever as they are, there'll be a way around it. I had envisioned that if you didn't have a seal on it, that it could be akin to sticking a cork in by your hand and having enough left out there where you can just grab it, and to me that would not be enough.
Through the Chair, Representative Coghill, I share your point of view, and that's why the language, I believe, says that it would require a recorking instrument to remove it. And so food and beverage establishments are inspected by the Alcohol Board, by the DEC, so presumably restaurants that would participate in a recorking program would have to have that kind of a tool, in their kitchens or on the floor, in order to allow for a bottle of wine to be fully recorked, so that there's not a stub sticking out, for lack of a better word. It's kind of what you're. I think if I read your concern correctly,
Chairman. And I just want to mention for the committee, Representative Coghill, the letter from Doug Griffin, the director of the ABC board, puts in their places this comment that the bill provides for the ABC board to establish safe and simple ways to address the issue of recorking and does not see this as a problem. Unfortunately, Alaska does, you know, have the advantage of following after 33 states. Do you have a question?
Just a comment at this point. Both the sponsor of this bill and I both have a conflict of interest here. I'd like to put him out of the business of being able to have wine, and I think he sells it. So,
sir,
I probably don't have this. To me, is a good common sense measure, so I'm not going to have a problem with it. But with the problem that I was going to have is if there's some way that somebody could walk out with an open container somehow, to me that would be inappropriate. And so if it's a professional way of inserting it, be quite similar to buying it from a store, if I understand correctly. And I would try to put them out of business for doing that, too. So,
through the chair, Representative Coghill, in my private sector job, I myself and bartenders have had to run after people who wander outside, particularly in the summer months, with an open container because it's against the law. The intent behind this bill is quite the opposite, to make it more secure, to make our roads more secure, so that in the same way that if you finished half a sandwich and you were full, that if you drank half a bottle of wine and you were content, that you would recork it and enjoy it in the privacy of your home in the same way that you would enjoy your leftovers in the privacy of your home. And the intent of this is to create a win at the table for everybody, the restaurant that's selling the product, the consumer who is enjoying it, who doesn't want to surrender some of that value, and for the safety of the general public who doesn't know that those people that they just passed on the highway drank a full bottle of wine instead of half a bottle of wine because they didn't want to leave $20 worth of product sitting at a table. And I've seen that before. And so it's a zero fiscal note. It's a lot of common sense. It's good public policy. 33 other states do this, and I think it would be good for the state of Alaska to adopt.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the bill unless there's any other discussion.
I would like to just make a quick comment. I believe that first I just have a question is, Representative Ramos, do you feel that any establishments would have any form or any type of problem with the any restitution from anybody trying to come back after them of being because it's been recorked? Do you think that those regulations pretty much have been established?
No, I don't think the liability is any greater than if you serve somebody a glass of wine or if you overserve somebody and they go out and have an accident. I think the standard liability is the same.
Mr. Chairman, you bring up an interesting point. Maybe the liability on product quality, has there been any challenges to recorking in other states on product liability? You know, you're taking and recorking a brand at your own establishment, and I just wonder if we open ourselves up then to any other liability.
Through the chair, Representative Crockett, we'll look into that before this goes to Labor and Commerce and inquire about that particular issue. And to that end, I'd like to just let the committee know that although I support this and it's my bill, I do have a conflict of interest in that I control two beer and wine licenses and two beverage dispensary licenses. But I see people drink more than they intend to, of table wine in particular, only so that they don't surrender the value. And that's why I'm such an advocate of this common sense approach, because I think it makes our roads safer.
May I comment, too, that it doesn't necessarily mean that the person driving home is the person who drank the wine either. You know, it could be the guest or the husband or the wife who maybe you might want to offer the bottle to a guest that hasn't been drinking, whatever. That doesn't mean that the person who consume partially the bottle is the one driving home either. Do we have anybody from that would like to testify from the audience? Seeing and hearing none, any committee further to committee discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sense to me.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that we move House Bill 382 out of committee with individual recommendations and no attached fiscal note.
Seeing and hearing no objection, this bill is moved from committee. Next, we will hear an overview from the Juneau Economic Development Council.
Hey.
State your name.
Lance Miller with Juneau Economic Development Council. And thank you for having me here today. And let's see, we'll try to keep this moving. As you saw in your handout, there's a bunch of slides, but we don't have to dwell on all of them in a lot of detail. Just a little background. I'm the director of the Juneau Economic Development Council. It's a private nonprofit organization based here in Juneau with programs locally, regionally, and statewide. My background is actually in geology. I'm a geologist before this. I worked in the minerals industry throughout Alaska and overseas, and I have a PhD in economic and structural geology. And also in the audience is Megan Gleason, who's with JEDC, and Eric Downey with Alaska Manufacturers Extension Partnership. And Chuck Becker happened to be in town with the Export Assistance Council through the Department of Commerce. Because we're going to talk a little bit about that. So I guess to get this thing rolling, and
Mr. Miller?
Yep.
Excuse me real quick for the members of the committee. We just want to have this little discussion here, somewhat of an open discussion. We're going to relax the rules, general committee rules. If you have a question for Mr. Miller, just feel free to speak up. Ask your questions, we can keep moving along.
Yeah, thank you for that. And first I want to talk a little bit about the global economy, at least my view on it from my experience there. So it won't necessarily be everybody's view, but my view. And then talk about how that fits in, how Alaska fits in with that global economy. And then talk about some of our programs that we have that are have statewide implications. And I guess a main theme here is that I think for the future of Alaska, and it's kind of, you know, I mean, it's talked about a lot, but we really need to be conscious of the competitive nature of the global economy. And if we don't keep up, which I'm afraid in some sectors we're not, Alaska is going to fall behind and the U.S. is as well. In fact, there's a lot of indicators that we already are falling behind. On a more positive note, I guess one of the themes here is imagination. And I do like quotes, and there's a couple of good ones here. One by Albert Einstein, imagination is more important than knowledge. And another one by Charles Schwab, of course, a famous financial man. A man to carry on a successful business must have imagination. He must see things in a vision, a dream of the whole thing. So I think it's important, and this is what we do when we try to help people, counseling businesses, entrepreneurs. If you just really are out to make money, you may or may not make a lot of money. But I think it's sparking the passion in people to pursue what they want to do, whatever it is, and then good things happen. I think, you know, Bill Gates, he's talked about that as well. I mean, people have done really well that you think of the most wealthiest people in the world. Why did they do it? It probably wasn't just to make money. And I think that's something that Alaskans need to come to grips with, too. And it starts, of course, you know, locally and with the educational system. This one with the lights, you may not be able to see too well, but I really like this view. Some of you may have seen it before. It's a composite of the world. And it really puts Alaska into perspective. It shows we're pretty dark compared to the rest of the world. You can see where the markets and the population and the rest of the world exist. Pretty much in Alaska, what you see is Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Prudhoe Bay. And there's a little spot by Juneau and Whitehorse up in Canada there. And I put some smiley faces because I think the future for Alaska is pretty bright. And then we're going to talk about a couple other areas, India, China, and then I had question marks, of course, in Central Asia and the Middle East. So to talk a little bit about China, well, first of all, does anybody know what this red line is that goes from sort of the eastern U.S., North America, to Mexico, and then to China? A few years ago, the big fuss over NAFTA, we were worried about losing our competitive advantage to Mexico for manufacturing. Well, that seems like that's sort of a distant memory now, because now it's China. So I think, again, we're seeing this global, how capital moves globally so quickly. Well, there's a reason for that. In China, the under 18-year-old population is greater than the combined population of the U.S. and Great Britain. There's 18 million people a year entering the workforce. And in 2004, they, if you believe their statistics, they graduated approximately 450,000 engineers. We graduate about 65,000. I heard another fact that, since this is a judiciary room, I don't know if it's appropriate, but in Japan, several years ago, the ratio of attorneys to of engineers to attorneys was about 50-1. And you know what it is in the U.S.?
Too much.
The other way. So the point is, if we're going to be competitive in the long run, we really need to look at that, you know, building the workforce, building the technical aspect of that. The other thing about China is everybody, or many people, are learning English, and it's actually the second largest English-speaking country in the world. And of course, we've talked about the Pacific Rim a lot in Alaska and the opportunities, and there's 3 billion people living there. Another quote, this is from Anais Nin, and I think it's quite appropriate to anything. It's good for business overseas. It's what I experienced there. We don't see things as they are, we see things as we are. So that's one I always try to keep in mind. But these are some images from Russia when I was working there, and it's interesting that just because you have a wealth of resources, of course, doesn't always mean that things will be rosy. We know the problems, the economic problems there, that have happened, the strife over the centuries. And the gold dredge in the lower left, actually the gold produced from that district, the Lena district, there was more gold produced from that one district than the entire state of Alaska throughout history to today, to give you an idea. And then just as another note, this fellow up in the upper left there, he was our business manager. We were keeping track of the rubles to dollars, and one time, I actually personally had to take about $24,000 in $100 bills, you know, over. China. From 78 to 2004, the GDP grew at about 9.4%. We're about they're about 1.6 trillion. And so around 2030, it'll become the world's largest. And these images just show the sort of the primitive nature of some of China, yet at the same time, the very advanced and modern. As far as India, it's been in the press a little bit, but not as much as China. And I think they are actually one to really keep an eye on. Their GDP has been growing significantly, about twice as much as the U.S. And again, they have a significant population under 25, about 500 million people. So again, you have these emerging countries that have a strong workforce, they're becoming well-educated, and a lot of young people. As it shows here, India graduates about 290,000 engineers annually, 55 million cell phone users. I mean, that's incredible. You know, 33 million internet users. And they will probably surpass China in population by 2050. And then just another note on smaller parts of the countries of the world that can have dramatic effects on us. These are some images from Uzbekistan and pictures of when the Soviet Union was there. But specifically, of course, I think Central Asia had been sort of overlooked until 9/11, and we saw the effects of religion and what it can do to our economy. But turning to Alaska, we're an oil state for sure. This is a picture of Kuparuk, the sun rising or setting, whichever you choose to pick. But I think what's great is we have the luxury to really take advantage of some opportunities. Have you folks seen any of these figures before of income and demographics? You may have seen some of these. So I can sort of move through these. But I think it's really important to recognize how, you know, really wages, and that's what this slide shows, since the mid-90s, have decreased in relation to the rest of the lower 48. This has been a problem, attracting people here, keeping people here. We all have discussed, it's been in the news, the issues of population, aging demographic. This is kind of really stands out of that baby boom generation, what's happening, and the zero to the under 40 population, and what's happening in Alaska to that. It's actually negative. Well, these graphs here, I think, are pretty amazing. And what you're looking at is age distribution. If you can make out the ages, that the wide waist there, if you will, is basically the baby boom. Okay, and on the right is male, or sorry, left is male, right is female. But importantly is in the U.S. in general, there is the baby boom population with a bit of a narrower waist in the 20 to 35-year-old population. In Anchorage, it's more pronounced. In Fairbanks, it's not as pronounced because of the military and the university, so there's a fair number of younger folks. But Juneau is kind of mirrors much of rural Alaska, many towns in southeast. We really have a lack of 20 to 35-year-olds, those people who are going to start new businesses, families, and eventually grow the state in the long run. And this graphic shows those trends. The only place that's really growing is Anchorage, Mat-Su. I think Fairbanks is doing okay, but not growing like the Mat-Su. And of course, southeast has been seeing a decrease in population other than Juneau. Now I want to just briefly talk a bit about some of the JDC programs. And these things are in your handout, so I won't go over it too much. But we do have a revolving loan fund that in 2004, we're still updating the numbers, had about $13 million in sales revenue. We counsel clients. We had a Huna Incubator project, was actually a retail store in the new Icy Strait development in Huna, which was sold as part of the program to locals, and it's one of the few locally owned store shops, storefronts in that development. We completed a salmon byproduct utilization project last year. We have a wood product specialist in Sitka who works statewide. And last year also the Ketchikan Wood Tech Center was spun out. JDC was helping to manage it into its own organization. And then I'm going to talk more about our Department of Defense project that we have. These are just as a slide of, has anybody here been to the Icy Straits development in Huna? You guys been? No. This isn't the time of year to go there, but if you're here in the summer, it's in the old cannery right up there, right outside of Huna, great place. And again, what we had was a LLC which was taken over by the employees, and it was received an award last year, Innovation Award from National Association of Development Organizations. Our loan fund, and this is a region-wide fund, it's about a $3 million loan fund. It's for essentially a little bit higher risk businesses. We partner with banks, so we don't want to compete with banks, but we'll take the more risky part of the deal. And some examples of that has been Icy Straits Lumber, a really great operation over in Huna, Inner Island Ferry Authority between Ketchikan and Hollis, to name a few, Glacier Gardens, a mine tour here in Juneau as well. The Wood Products Development Service, Dan Parent in Sitka, as I mentioned, he works around the state working with small mill owners, and also he's been doing lumber drying kiln workshops throughout the state. And we've been working with the USDA, State and Private Forestry, and the university on value-added lumber marketing and development. And the Ketchikan Wood Tech Center, based in Ketchikan, as I mentioned, it spun out last year. And hopefully people have seen some of these press releases last year. Really, its goal was to do testing of the main lumber species in Alaska so that they could get higher value for them. Because prior to this, all the lumber species were lumped into mixed species, which was essentially in there with Florida Georgia pine, which of course does not have that great structural integrity for engineered wood products. We have several partners we work with on collaborative projects. One of them, I mentioned Eric Downey, who is here from Alaska Manufacturing Extension Partnership. And this is a program that's nationwide, it's been privatized, It's fee-based. It's a third federal, a third state, and a third from private sector fees. And the goal here is to help grow the manufacturing sector, which, of course, is quite important in Alaska. And for every dollar spent, the clients must realize $3 in new investment, as well as $3 to $8 in new sales or cost savings. And they've been going, what, about a year?
No, a little less than a year.
And we've been working with them. They've been working with groups, partners throughout the state, such as JDC, so that we can share clients, leverage clients to give them better technical assistance so that they can essentially be successful. And again, it's spanned the spectrum from technology to seafood, boat building, and e-commerce, to name a few. And I introduced Chuck Becker earlier, talking about the international markets. It's, as we know, critical for Alaska. 10% of Alaska's gross state product is overseas. And in 2005, we're looking at exports on the order of $2.5 billion. $3.5 billion. It's funny, for as much as Alaska is dependent on the international economy, and we all know it and talk about it, but sometimes I find when you get down to the local level, we sort of forget that. And I think that's, again, part of the whole, when we're helping entrepreneurs, I mean, there's hardly one single product here that isn't somehow effective and benefited by the global economy. I'd like to talk a little bit about a project that has been quite successful and we're really excited about. It's called Springboard. It's a Department of Defense partnership where it's really technology transfer and commercialization. And this is in your packet, so we don't need to read the text. I know it's busy, but simply, I'd like to highlight a few companies. One is out of Palmer called Triveris. The slide on the left is how traditionally decks of aircraft carriers are washed. And I guess it keeps sailors busy, and also it's a good place for Alaskans to go for the winter work if you want to go to the South Pacific or something. But what they've done is come up with, it's almost like a Zamboni for an aircraft carrier. It's recirculating high pressure water. It goes through, there's no soap, cuts down on labor, environmentally friendly, and cost savings. Even they don't have to carry a whole room full of soap on an aircraft carrier, which space is money. This has been quite successful. They have a phase 3 SBIR for $2.4 million or so, and we're pretty encouraged that they're going to get significant contract for more of these. A few other companies, a software company in Anchorage, People Matter, we're working with them with the NSA for some software, Sequestered Solutions out of Anchorage for a piece of hardware called a network pump through the Naval Research Lab, and Ketchumak Research, which is out of Homer, which is working on a mobile under-vehicle inspection system. And this next figure is a picture of the platform. You drive a vehicle up on, there's cameras that go underneath, and what it can do is scan the undercarriage of the vehicle to look for any alterations to the chassis and for bombs. So it's a security thing, and they're also looking at it for drug enforcement as well. So these are entrepreneurs and highly technical companies in Alaska that are doing this, but there's a DoD pull. But the other thing is that DOD wants to see what they call dual use. So ideally, you'd have something, a patent, a technology out of DOD that is made better, cheaper, faster, essentially, in the private sector, and then use both back to DOD, but also in the commercial end. And of course, examples such as internet, GPS, are ones that come to mind quickly. So on that end, we do have assets. And I think it's pretty exciting what Alaska can do in this arena. One other project is that, and if you have questions, I know some of you have spoken with Megan Gleason and Mara Early. It's a knowledge industry network. In summary, this is a program to look at addressing the issues that we talked about previously, diversifying and growing the Alaskan economy through this passion, creativity, and innovation, and also creating an environment where that critical demographic, that 20 to 39, and if you're over 39, it still is important, especially if you're an entrepreneur, can thrive and be networked so that ideas can mix around and new companies and products can grow. Now I'd like to talk about a few industries which are important for Juneau but are also very important for Alaska. Of course, the cruise ship industry, and Juneau really is a portal in Southeast, for that matter, for Alaskan visitors. Last year, I think we saw over 900,000, around 875,000. And whichever line you want to look at for the growth trajectory, who knows what to believe. I think next year we hear is going to be a little bit slower, but nonetheless, it's certainly an important part of our economy here and for the state. Fisheries, there's numerous things one can do in the fisheries sector, but one of our projects at JDC we've worked on is focusing on the byproduct end. There's 50% of course, of fish are not used for human consumption. There's a company out of Juneau that's working in Southeast called Alaska Protein Recovery that is utilizing the fish byproduct and low-value fish to make it into liquid fish protein. They've invested over $5 million of private money into this. It's a barge you can see with stainless steel vats. It's an enzymatic process. And the product is being used for fertilizer, animal feed, and there is potential for human consumption, actually, as well. So these are the kind of things I think that can really add value. And I guess the way to think about it in the fisheries end is every agricultural industry has its pulp grade. We have pulp mills, or we did, some places still do, for lumber. You have orange juice, you have guacamole for low-value avocado, and the mixed nuts for candy for the, you know, low-value nuts. And really, we don't have that really here. Yeah?
Mr. Miller, you had mentioned the Alaska Protein Recovery salmon hydroslate. Is that the same group that's working on medicinal purposes too for Alaska, the skin off of salmon?
No, I don't believe so. Is that the one up in Kodiak?
That was in the news recently.
Yeah,
I just wondered if it's the same company expanding.
No, I know of that one. No, it's not. Yeah. They have sold some product, though, these. But, yeah, this isn't the same as that one. Yeah. Mineral resources, just wanted to mention, of course, Greens Creek is just to the east or west of us here. It's the largest silver producer in North America, and it's actually the largest single private employer in Juneau and the largest taxpayer. And I bring that up because there might be a conflict of interest here since I'm a geologist in the minerals industry, or was. But I think it's important because while it cannot pay the types of royalties to the state like oil because of the margins, it doesn't have the margins oil and gas does, but at the local level it's incredibly significant for the tax base and employment that we're seeing here. And as far as the minerals industry as a whole, the forecast for the future, of course, is looking pretty good. The graph on the left shows the total dollar value looking out to about 2012, going to exceed on the order of almost $5 billion. And employment in the state as a whole is continuing to rise to around 5,000 people. And again, it's at the local level, it's very significant. I know it is for Fairbanks and for Juneau. So just to wrap up, this was kind of a whirlwind through from the global picture to the state picture to our own programs. But I just want to give you a sense for some of our view of things. And we are working, as I mentioned, with economic development groups statewide, organizations statewide. And I think the outlook is pretty exciting for the state, but we do need to take new looks at things and leverage what we have coming down the pike. A couple last slides, a few images. Imagine a world without entrepreneurs and risk takers. A lot of these things fail, like I'm sure the guy with the cardboard wings there didn't do too well. For there are always ideas that really make a difference to society and can make a lot of money. And finally, since it's still hockey season, we are excited about our Shop for the Future. But as Wayne Gretzky said, you always miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So you got to take those shots.
Representative Lynn.
The road out of Juneau, into Juneau, everywhere you want to look at it, I think that'd be a tremendous economic boon for Juneau and the area. Do you have any comment on that?
It would. I mean, the transfer, well, there's the construction, which, you know, those jobs are...
But that comes and goes. I know, a long time.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, I think what you see is any time you can transfer goods and services, people and information more easily, it helps everybody. So, yeah. I know if we took a kids' hockey team up to Whitehorse last spring, and it cost about $500 each and took days, and we got into Skagway at 3 a.m., you know. It's tough. So if you can do that easier, sure, it'd be good.
Mr. Miller, did you have a follow-up?
No, I don't.
Mr. Miller, in what fashion does our state government, with the Department of Commerce, ADA, do they what assistance, what role do they play in helping these businesses?
Actually, one of our programs here, we work with DCCED on business initiatives. As far as ADA, it's case by case. Of course, they've been involved in many of the developments. Some they don't like to talk about, and some that are quite successful. I mean, they were investor in the Red Dog Road and things. So I think those are all pieces that are useful for businesses and development. But I guess, and maybe if this helps to answer the question too, all these different organizations fit in, I think, for the state's development at different stages, depending if you're an entrepreneur starting out or if you're a bigger company that needs, you know, some major infrastructure. But yeah, it's important.
I guess to delve into that question a little bit further is, do you feel that the state of Alaska is doing a good job at trying to assist companies in developing their programs?
In developing...
Well, some of these businesses are offering a lot of new opportunities, economic development opportunities to the citizens of Alaska. Is the state doing a good job at providing what they need, do you think?
I think the state could do more for the innovative businesses. And, for example, I just saw today on the news a newsletter I received that Florida, Jeb Bush, just had a new $650 million initiative for what is technology-based economic development. And from venture funds to actually technical assistance to, you know, looking at what can they do to better court the space and aerospace industry, of course, with NASA down there and things. So I think there's more opportunity for the state in that regard. And another thing I didn't mention, but one of our focuses has been is really the application of science and technology to Alaskan businesses. So sometimes technology, people kind of, you're thinking of some high-tech thing. I think there's a lot of opportunity to get more value from our industries, be it mining, fishing, timber, by just better use of technology and being innovative and supporting companies that will be. Does that sort of answer that?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Well, thank you, Mr. Miller. I guess that will wrap it up on the Juneau Economic Development Council. I'm sure that you will feel free to entertain any questions that committee members or anybody else who's seen this on TV here, we might want to talk to you about it. Could you give them how to get a hold of you?
JEDC.org, www.JEDC.org.
The phone number?
Phone number is 463-3662. So on my email is lmiller@JEDC.org, and I'll leave you folks cards. So.
And with that, hopefully we'll try and develop as much economic development as we can. I know you guys are doing your job. Let us know what we can do to help you out. Any more from the committee?
Oh, thank you very much for your good work.
Thank you. Call that a wrap.